The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Higher education governance and the current apprenticeship system are in need of overhaul and reform. That's the view of Simon Harris, Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science. Today, they launch a new three-year strategy for the department. The new plan sets out ambitious goals for the higher education sector, including an apprenticeship action plan, which will aim to increase apprenticeships by 10,000 per year. And Minister Simon Harris joins us on the line. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you for having me.
Now, I'm looking at the headlines of this plan, but it's really a plan about planning. Improve the transition to further and higher education for school leavers. Implement a new 10-year strategy to improve literacy, numeracy and digital skills to ensure nobody's left behind. I'll just take a few of these at random. Overhaul the apprenticeship system and develop a new plan to increase apprenticeships by 10,000 every year. Put in place a sustainable approach to higher education funding. It's all about, you know, what we might think about doing. It's not about doing. I can't see any kind of action plan in this plan.
Oh, no, let's talk about each of them. I'd love to, because, I mean, what you probably know is ministers are required by law to publish what they call statements of strategy. And the statements of strategy commit, you know, the goals and the values that you want to drive in your department. And that's what we're publishing today. But under each of those headings, and indeed about 30 more, we have very concrete things we want to get done this year. I mean, I want to, just to be very clear, I want to radically overhaul the CAO system. I want to create an integrated education system where people can move from further education to higher education with much more ease. I want to look at how we can learn the lessons from COVID in terms of blended learning for people maybe living in rural Ireland or people who can't pack their bags and go to university for 4 years past. So we've very ambitious plans on the apprenticeship.
Yeah, but the last time you were on, you said that you know, we would talk in detail about this when it happens. But we have the same sort of mom and apple pie-ish ambitions in this. So, for example, the practicalities. When will the CAO embrace the apprenticeship system? It can't be this year because already the CAO process is underway. So that's a commitment.
It's going to be
by 2022, it'll be completely reformed.
Not to push back to you too much now early on a Monday morning, but this is not motherhood and apple pie or any such characterisation of it at all. This is the biggest overhaul of the higher education sector in the history of the state, right? And I'm happy to be held to account in relation to that. This is about making sure that this idea of the 17-year-olds seeing just a couple of options about universities and not seeing apprenticeships, not seeing further education. It has to end. It has to end for a whole load of reasons. It has to end in the interests of the student. It also has to end from an economic point of view too. So
sure.
2022, we're going to start the rollout.
We're all in agreement with the ambition. Yeah. So there are a few technical things. The CAO is owned by the universities, number one.
It is.
So they have to come on board. Apprenticeships also depend the cooperation of employers. So how is all of that going to be on the page in front of, on the screen, if you like, in front of the student in 2022?
So a couple of things. There's already been meetings between SULIS, which is our state agency for further education and training, and the CAO. There's been a number of engagements. I'm due to meet the CAO again on Wednesday of this week. And I don't wish to speak for the CAO, but I think all of our universities who own the CAO understand the benefit of this. Indeed, many university presidents, the Provost of Trinity and others, have been out talking about this in the media for quite a number of years at this stage. We're now going to actually do it. It can happen in one of two ways. It can either happen through an expanded CAO form, in other words, where the CAO links in with us and very kindly agrees to help us with the processing of FET further education applications, or it can happen through a connected system that we would run, but that would provide the student with a one-stop-shop portal. So the student sees one page, one application form. How we do it behind the scenes, I suppose, is a matter of engagement between SULIS and the CAO. On the apprenticeships, yes, you're right, it's a matter for the private sector, but not only. I mean, I think the public sector have really been appalling in this space, being honest. Do you know we only have about 300 apprentices in the entire public sector? I mean, that's a disgrace. It's a real question of, it's a real way of, you know, the state lecturing business on what to do, but not stepping up to the plate itself.
But
so under our new apprenticeship
opportunities, just to explain, what are the opportunities in the public sector for apprentices? Because we always think of apprentices as doing things that are very practical, you know, whether it's on a building site or whether it's technology, aero engine servicing, all of that kind of thing, which the state doesn't do. So what does the state do that is appropriate to the apprenticeship model?
So you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, there's a view that apprenticeships are just about trades and crafts. And while that's a very important point, we now have 59 apprenticeships, and some of them are in the areas of financial management. Some of them are in the whole accounting space. I met a young accounting technician who's an apprentice with Cork County Council, Zoe. I met her a couple of weeks ago. That's the county council showing initiative, saying we need an accounting technician. Let's take on a young person, or indeed a not so young person, through the apprenticeship model and give them a chance. So under the new, I suppose I'm letting you in on something here because we haven't published it yet, but under the new action plan on apprenticeships, which will go to Cabinet this month, we are going to demand that every department, every state agency, every county council set the target for what it can do on apprenticeships. I think that's, you know, people always say governments don't create jobs, and that's generally true. But this is actually a space in which government can create real career opportunities. And on the trade side, on the craft side, I don't want to dismiss that either, because we all know there's so much, let's call it undone work, in every community across Ireland where we could desperately do with more people to do practical things. And there's real opportunities there, be it in the OPW, be it in the local authorities as well. So I want to see the state step up alongside working with industry. I mean, industry get this. They actually get how it makes sense to take on a young person, train them at the same time as they're accessing education, in many ways get to mould them into the employee of the future. Yeah. But the public sector has been laggards in this regard, and our new plan is going to change that.
And indeed, in Newstalk, for example, we regularly have interns in who learn on the job as they are still in college, and it's very effective, and they find out very quickly whether this is the kind of life they want or whether it's, you know, they might find other things to do. Now, buried in all of this, that's unkind, included in all of this is put in place a sustainable approach to higher education funding. Now, there's the big one.
That is the big one. And I think politicians have, you know that phrase in Father Ted, is there anything to be said for another math? There's been a bit of politicians saying, is there anything to be said for another report, Pat? Because political cowardice has dominated this for generations, right across the political divide. So you'll be aware that, I think it was the last Oireachtas received what they call the Cassells Report, a very good body of work done by Peter Cassells. The then all-party committee said, sure, we should send that off for an economic evaluation. That's where it now is. The good news is that economic evaluation from the European Commission is due to come to me this summer. And what I'm saying to you now, and I'll come back on your programme anytime and discuss this, is we're not going to shirk the decisions that need to be made here. We have increased funding to higher education in each of the years since the Cassells report. It's gone up by about €500 million. We're now spending €1.83 billion a year, the most we've ever spent, actually. I think it matches the 2008 level, which was the previous record. The key to unlocking all of these reforms is that interaction between sustainable funding and the reform programme, and we need to do both. I know the Taoiseach is very committed to it. That's why he set up this new department.
Okay, but the big question is, how is the funding to be shared between the state, which already subsidises courses? I mean, some more than others. An arts course might be subsidised to the tune of a couple of grand every year. A technical course, a medical course might be subsidised to the tune of 10 grand a year. So, you know, who pays what? Because if you're in America and you pay for a medical education, you might end up on graduation with debts of maybe $250,000. Here, people end up with precious little debt and a brilliant education, and then off many of them go to richer fields, shall we say.
Yeah, look, I mean, my sense of this is we already live in a country where around 44% of students have the registration fee paid for them. So nearly half of students in college today in Ireland don't pay a registration fee and therefore don't face an upfront cost to access education. Around 50% or a little over do. That registration fee is now at €3,000. There's really three issues that the economic evaluation is going to look at. What is the size, what is the amount of the underfunding of higher education in Ireland? That's one issue. Secondly, what would it cost to put in place a robust, modern, fit-for-purpose student support scheme? And then the third is, you know, what is the impact of the student registration fee and how does that compare internationally? It is my view, and you may have a different one from the way you put your question, but it is my view that student loans don't work. I do think they can be a barrier, particularly for people from socioeconomic communities of disadvantage. I have a view, quite a strong view, and it's not the government yet, because I have to bring proposals to government, but I have a view that an undergraduate degree should be a natural extension of our education system. Like Donal O'Malley decided there was benefit to secondary education being available to all in the 50s. He was told he was mad. He was even told by his own officials he was mad. It was transformational. And I think that's the sort of space we need to be in. We already have our employers contributing through a levy that goes into the National Training Fund, and we have the Exchequer contributing as well. But we're going to bottom out these issues, and we're going to have a concrete set of proposals this year. We're going to publish all of the information, and there'll be nowhere for anyone to hide in terms of saying exactly where they stand on this matter.
Okay, so your, I suspect your view is that that it should be free to everybody, with perhaps a registration fee, which in many cases would be paid by the state for those of little means. That is where you're coming from, but the funding of that is the big issue, isn't it?
The funding of it is the big issue. But, you know, the funding of everything in politics and everything in policy is the big issue. I mean, it's a question of what is the economic benefit to living in a country where everybody can access an undergraduate degree, should that be their wish. And actually, in an ironic way, this is back to the earlier, how we started this conversation. Some of this is about directing people to the appropriate place to get to where they want to get to. So not everybody need go to university if they can get to where they want to through an apprenticeship, through further education and training. So I think it all interlocks, quite frankly. Showing students all of their options, not having a situation where we have such high dropout rates in our universities, but perhaps because we pressure our students at 17 to decide what they want to do with the rest of their life.
Yeah. I mean, in the German educational system, you know, people might be several years older before they would be faced with that kind of question. Some of the comments coming in from News Talk texters: the wage paid to the apprentice together with block release makes it uneconomic for employers. That's from Declan in Limerick. Another one: the billing workers should be back working, otherwise we will have a skills drain and a brain drain. And I heard Tom Parlin, I think, talking about that yesterday, where he's saying, you know, if you're getting 350 a week as a PUP payment, but you're normally taking home $1,000, you'll go to where the work is. You won't stick around here at 350 a week.
Yeah, can I deal with Declan's point first?
Yeah,
I mean,
please. Yep.
I think Declan makes a fair point. So there's two parts to that, two answers to that, I think. The first is we have introduced for the first time ever a financial incentive to an employer who takes on an apprentice. So an employer now gets €3,000 if they hire an apprentice. That we've seen a really good response to that, and we've extended that scheme. Second point he makes is a really valid one, and it's come up a lot in the consultation that we've done for the action plan, which is, you know, employers do find it very hard, the way in which the apprenticeships sometimes are structured, that they lose their apprentice for very large blocks of time. And is there a way of being more flexible around that? And without getting too much into the plan, that's something we're actively looking at. On the issue of construction and construction sites, I mean, look, we have to be guided here by our public health reality, but it's been well said by government that trying to reopen safely construction is amongst the next set of priorities, and we'll be reviewing the public health restrictions later this month in advance of the 5th of April.
And another text from John the Bricky. He says, I wouldn't advise any young person to take an apprenticeship in the construction industry. You end up working on bogus self-employment situation. No holiday pay, no pension contributions, not much employment rights at all. It's a scam. Trust me, I'm 30 years working as a bricky. It's hard even to get a car loan at times. The point there being not about the apprenticeship. You learn your trade. That's fair enough. But that the life you have to lead after that, bogus self-employed, even though you're effectively an employee, just to let the employer off the hook in terms of holiday rights and all of that.
Well, look, I think as you've indicated, they are two separate points. I mean, I've met a lot of young apprentices in the construction sector who find it very rewarding in terms of career opportunities. The issue of anything to do with bogus self-employment is something that absolutely needs to be cracked down on. There's clear legislation in that regard. But I wouldn't like any particularly young listener to be put off by a negative experience there, because I can certainly counter every negative experience with 10 or 12 positive ones.
I worked as a plumber in Melbourne, says another texter. Over there, block release is done 1 week per month. It seems like a far better way of doing it than people being absent for long, long periods.
Yeah, I think that's back to Declan's point. There are more, like, if you want this to work, we register about 6,000, sometimes 7,000 new apprentices a year. We want to get to 10,000 a year by 2025. If we want this to work, as I said, the public sector needs to step up, and we need to make it easier for the private sector to also take part. And this issue of block release is a big one, and your texter is entirely right. There are better ways of doing it in other countries. And again, we haven't published the action plan yet, so I have to bring it to government this month.
Okay.
But there are definitely lessons to be learned.
A number of texters asking about apprenticeships for older people. One person say, I never got a chance in my life, I'm in my 50s. Another one, I'm 43, worked most of my life in media advertising, sales and marketing, was laid off due to COVID, now cannot even get an interview for a job despite over 15 years experience. I'm sure my age is the barrier. So will there be apprenticeships open to not just young people?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And actually, I'm really glad they brought up that issue, because there shouldn't be anything ageist about our conversation here. I mean, apprenticeships and indeed education is and must be accessible to people of all ages. I'd encourage anybody listening to this of any age. We launched a new website called gov.ie/the right course. And on that, you can see all of the options available to you. And I do want people to know that there isn't an age barrier. Now, one of the interesting things we are doing now, and we've started to roll it out in Donegal, and I want to see it rolled out nationally, is a program called the Recognition of Prior Learning. So you could be someone in your 50s, let's just say working as a healthcare assistant in a nursing home for 20 years. You could be the best person in the place, the most experienced, but you never got that bit of paper. And it's bothering you and it's bugging you, and you rightfully want that piece of paper. So we now, through our ETBs, are working on what's called recognition of prior learning. In other words, matching your experience, your vast experience, to modules as well. And that's going very well. And I think there's a whole generation.
So the idea would be that you've got all this experience. You'd have all this experience, but no piece of paper, which would limit your mobility. So you can get a piece of paper that then would allow you to stand up your experience in a professional way.
Exactly. And also a lot of people, and a lot of these workers in the healthcare sector are women, and they kind of feel, you know, you've entrusted me with caring for your mom or your grandmom. You know, I'm doing maybe one of the most important jobs I could possibly be doing. But, you know, I'd like that recognition from the state. You know, it matters to people. And as you say, it matters from a mobility point of view. So I think there's definitely something in this recognition of prior learning. Like, a whole generation of people didn't have the opportunity to pack the bags and go off to university.
Now, some extra people are coming to Ireland, it seems, to do their university courses post-Brexit. And the question will be, will they be taking places that are scarce and therefore impact on the CAO points?
So two parts to that. There's about 6,500 extra people have applied to the CAO this year. And I think there's two interesting things in that. You've referenced one. There's what I call the Brexit effect. About 2,600 more people have applied with non-Irish leaving certs, if you like. And also about 1,500 more people have applied who are mature applicants. I call that the COVID effect. So the Brexit effect and the COVID effect. Now, we have funding in place, and I do want particularly Leaving Cert students and their parents to hear this, because I know it's a worrying time. We have funding in place for extra college places in the region of about 4,100 this year. And we're now working actively, not just in my department, but across government, because some of these require placements as well, to see if there's more we can do now that we have certainty on the Leaving Cert. That group will report back to me at Easter, and I'll bring proposals to government shortly after. So, the other thing to say, I mean, it is kind of swings and roundabouts, to be honest. On the one hand, we see more people applying to the CAO. On the other hand, we see a dramatic reduction in the number of international students for obvious reasons in our country. There was about 40,000 almost last year. It's about 11,000 this year. So, you know, some things work in the favour. And
it shouldn't impact. The availability will be there, one presumes, if the government is prepared to fund them. So in terms of the academic availability, there is spare capacity given the dearth of international students.
Yeah, there's two key numbers, 50 and 80. Every year, around 50% of students get their first choice in their CAO, and every year, about 80% of students get their first, second or third choice. And that's the ratio I'm trying to maintain this year, so that this year's students aren't at any more of a disadvantage than any previous year.
Minister, thank you very much for joining us. Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science, Simon Harris.